So today I'll be making the case for a specialized architecture for storing numeric time series data. Data such as sensor streams, systems monitoring metrics, and more. This is work with Raja, Anthony, and Greg, but also thanks to many other folks. Okay, so first, what are numeric time series, and why would we want a system for querying them? In particular, large archive numeric time series. Well, as it turns out, in line with one of today's buzzwords, there are a number of big data analyses that are using stored numeric time series data to mine conclusions out. So to be a bit more specific about some applications of time series data mining, for flavor, some concrete examples, cardiologists are interested in finding anomalies in electrocardiogram data, such as this little blip identified in red here, which can indicate issues like heart problems. Work on anomaly detection uses correlation between components of distributed systems. In this example, torn from a work that was considering the Stanley Autonomous Vehicle and Thunderbird supercomputer, using correlation between different time series. The development of wearable activity sensors and their increasing popularity has driven interest in doing things like matching patterns across these wearable activity sensor time series logs. And finally, though certainly not exhaustively, backtesting financial models also requires historical stock price data, which is also numerical time series. And for many of these potential applications, the potential data is big. Some recent analyses have started to use much larger scale data than some of the many trivial analyses that have been done in the past. And I won't read this entire quote to you, but this snippet was from a data mining paper about a year ago that was considering doing similarity search, similar to one of the examples on the previous slide. And their entire data set they were looking at was about a terabyte. And they observed that this data set was larger than all previous data mining papers combined, not just in the area of similarity search. But yet, time series data on the scale of a terabyte is actually pervasive today. Hospitals collect terabytes of EEG data, flights of all sorts of craft emit similar sizes, and even just a portion of our nation's power grid is emitting terabytes of time series data. Okay, so given that we might want to mine a large amount of time series data, what do folks who want to do these analyses actually use today? Well, from conversations with a few folks, we've heard stories of waiting hours to load raw text data into MATLAB, or when that doesn't work, manually splitting text files across multiple MATLAB nodes so that they can actually fit into memory and can analyze them. And as what I promised to be the last quote of today's talk, for another taste of the frustration of current practice and some of the ad hoc solutions that are out there for this sort of problem at the moment, this was from some analysts looking at financial data who ended up using flat text files and loading them into MATLAB in R, which sort of worked, except for its awkwardness and inefficient use of space, which is a subject that I'll return to later and sort of the focus of this initial work. So given these areas of interest and the emerging scale of numeric time series data, it seems natural that we might want to ask if there's a framework out there to store and query numeric time series data. And this talk will make the case that the answer to the question of how to store and query this sort of data is something that doesn't exist right now. While current databases and frameworks do support some of the operations that you'd like to have for time series data, they also support many operations that aren't necessary for time series data. And in place of those requirements, there are some access patterns and queries that distinguish time series data from the more general class of queries that we might want to run. All right, so this sort of motivates the need that there might be an opportunity for a specialized store here for numeric time series. So in particular, just as an outline for the talk today, I'll talk about what some properties of numeric time series imply about what we might be able to drop from a more general purpose analysis system. And then describe what we've been seeing might need to be supported instead for a system specialized for storing numeric time series. All right, so before digging into that, let's start off with a model of what we actually mean, a more concrete definition of numeric time series. And our model is that we have a number of streams, often consisting of samples from, say, some process, some sensor, some systems monitoring thing, where the number of samples per stream is significantly longer than the number of streams. So in this little sketch here, the streams are longer than they are tall. Each stream might have a little bit of metadata associated with it, like an origin, the names shown at left here. And they consist of numbers, often real valued samples, but they're often fixed precision since they're originating from things like systems monitoring devices, sensors, digital sources. And these incoming streams have a narrower write pattern than general data. So just as a sample of some of the differences that distinguish time series data from other sources of data, they're append only. If we need to delete data, it's only for aging out old data. And if we're needing to update something, it's only large swaths of data for data cleaning. And even then, there's some question of, do you actually want to update a chunk of data or just version something alongside it? each of these time series streams also only has one writer to the head of each of those streams. We have something like a sensor or systems monitoring device that's really only delivering data to one target. And also, many of these sources of time series data, like, say, sensors, are significantly less durable than the hardware itself, suggesting that maybe we don't need such strict durability guarantees for this sort of data. So given that there are some properties that numeric time series data doesn't have that we might want to support from more general sorts of data, what do we need from time series data instead? And this sort of brings up one of the key class of queries on time series data, which is that one of the key demands is a time range as opposed to a point query, something just asking for a single fact. So there's one familiar example of a query on time series that we might want to do. Think of one of the most familiar operations we do on time series, just making a plot of it. And that's fundamentally just extracting a raw range of data and visualizing the output. But beyond just simple time range queries for visualization, the need for obtaining time ranges goes beyond that. And one of the next steps we'd like to take with a time range is to pre-process it. Since the raw output of a range scan, though you could use it for visualization, often isn't useful for much beyond that. Just as a sample of some of the things I mean by pre-processing and the operations you might need to do, you might need to resample data to a fixed rate. Many analyses require, say that you had data sampled at a 20-second rate, and then there were some 30-second gaps in between, and then more 20-second periods. You might need to resample that entire thing to a 20-second period. Interpolate missing data points. Sensors often lose data. You might have gaps in the middle. You might need to fill that in. Or even normalizing values within an individual stream within negative 1-to-1 range. Which is also necessary for many techniques, like the similarity search case shown in that first slide, to produce sensible results. And one observation about all these three sorts of pre-processing is that they can happen on each individual stream that's coming in. We don't need data from other streams to be able to perform this sort of pre-processing. But even after they've been pre-processed, the raw time series data itself is often too large or too messy for many analysis techniques to work. So many data mining operations on time series data work on summaries of the raw data. And one straightforward one that I'll start off with is multi-resolution data, downsampled from your original streams at varying granularities. So you can imagine if I had a year's worth of second granularity data, I don't want to work with all of it, so I downsample it to some lower resolution. You can imagine this is useful for visualization. Imagine you just want to make a plot with fewer data points in it. But also for accelerating many queries that would otherwise use raw time series data or high granularity time series data. And just for another sort of familiar example of where multi-resolution support actually exists in practice, some familiar data stores used today, if you've heard of RRD tools, store the last minute, the last day of minute granularity data, and then downsample to the last week of hour granularity data. So it's sort of an inflexible form of multi-resolution aggregation. And the observation that I'd like to make on this slide also is that, much like pre-processing, if you need to create multi-resolution aggregates, you can do that independently for each stream. You don't need data from other streams to do this sort of aggregation. But beyond multi-resolution summaries, there are a variety of other per-stream summaries that might be extracted from time series to make analysis more tractable or for other methods that work on top of it. Which are more involved than simply downsampling or something that you might think of normal summarization of simply counting or slicing data. And just to highlight a few examples here, one is the Fourier transform, which is often used sort of for signal analysis, but it's also used for other purposes, like as a distance measure between streams, a foundation for indexing multiple streams in a database, and more. And this is just an example of some time series data and an FFT of that same data source. For that same stream, a wavelet decomposition, which is also used for indexing and some other analysis purposes, but it's also broken up in time, so you can use it for that same multi-resolution use case that was on the previous slide. And then finally, symbolic representations, which are similar to just quantizing portions of the time series. And you can sort of see that correspondence in that picture there, have recently become popular for some of the indexing and similarity search cases on time series. And the observation here is that these three summaries are also for each individual stream, although I don't want to mislead you. There are certainly some that require multiple streams, like some that contain information about correlation between different time series. And then finally, the third need we're going to focus on is allowing for compression. You might imagine this is archival data that's coming in. We'd like to keep it as compactly as possible. And we're also not sure upfront what the analysis demands on this sort of data might be. So you don't necessarily want to choose an aggregation upfront, like downsampling data, because you're not sure if it's going to, say, lose the tail end of your distribution or lose data points that you might consider outliers. So our third need in this work is lossless compression. So just to summarize where we're at, for time series data, we have a few non-goals, allowing for arbitrary point updates and deletes, allowing for concurrent writes to the head of the same stream, and all the sort of non-numeric queries that you might want to perform. While at the same time, we'd like to be able to focus on performing time range queries on individual multiple streams, a lot of operations that you might distribute across multiple streams, like pre-processing and summarization. And then finally, this goal that we saw hinted at earlier on, accommodating compression for time series data. And to meet these ends, the piece that we're focusing on in this very initial work is the lowest level of a system that would address some of the needs of time series, the storage level that lives below queries on this data. And although you can't see the next few layers of this because the projector is a bit washed out, there's a question of what's the interface that lives above the storage layer, and I'll talk a bit about that at the end. So this leads us to a simple proposal for how you'd like to archive this sort of data. And the first principle is to separate out all the timestamps and values in incoming data and buffer them separately. So to explain what's going on in the figure here, in this example of the layout we're proposing, we have two incoming streams with timestamps shown in green and different dimensions of values shown in blue in different patterns here. And you can see the timestamps are separated into one buffer. We have each dimension of values going to a separate buffer. And why would we propose this sort of layout? Well, the first is that if you wanted to perform a range query, it's essentially indexing into the correct timestamp block and then finding the index that you'd like to go into in the appropriate value block. These are also all append only, since we're only ever appending time series to the end of each of these blocks. And then finally, you can also perform some compact encoding on some of these. For example, timestamps can often be represented compactly with, say, we have a fixed sample period with just a start, a delta, and a number of those deltas afterwards. And in this work, we're considering generalizing that slightly by using delta and run length coding to encode all of the deltas and runs in data. And of course, none of these buffers needs to support multiple writers, as I had mentioned earlier on. Okay, and then when one of these blocks gets full and we want to flush it out to secondary storage, we'll propose having the same sort of layout on disk and then appending them each to the end so that you can do similar sorts of range queries and summarization and resampling operations over multiple blocks. And unlike, say, in a table store where you might need to recompact stored blocks later on, these things would still be in their final sorted order, so you don't need to do that. So just to highlight that again, the imagination is that you could map operations across each of these individual blocks and don't need to recompact them. Okay, so the initial evaluation that we have of this layout is, and to motivate it, in contrast with some other options for storing time series data, is looking at that first piece, the compression piece, relative to some of the other options that are available for storing time series data today. And for a selection of time series data, we've chosen a few data sets from systems monitoring data, from hardware on one cluster and both VMs and hardware on another cluster, some publicly available stock data, and a sensor network at our institution, where these data sets are varying in size. The horizontal axis here is the size of raw data, which is those red bars shown at the top. And we're showing the size they would be in a number of different layouts. So we'll start with raw data, where we're taking the text format that this data might come in. So imagine there was some analyst using MATLAB or R or what have you. And then the binary format of the layout that I showed on the previous slide. All right, so we'll compare that raw data size to a number of current storage options for time series data. The first one we're showing here is SQLite, as relational DBs are actually often used in practice in this scenario. And there's a chunk of database work that's actually using relational databases as the back-end historical stream storage end for performing historical analysis. OpenTSDB, which is a recently popular open-source time series database, where we use some of its basically the recommended production settings for storing incoming data, and two compression options in FinanceDB, which is a database specialized for storing time series data, whose name we can't reveal, but you might imagine there are some companies on Wall Street interested in storing large-scale time series data. And this is one of the ones that we could get our hands on to evaluate. And A and B are the two different compression options here. And finally, we looked at size as represented in the layout that we're proposing, with even just two off-the-shelf compression algorithms, LZO and ZIP, where timestamps are delta and run length encoded. So we're encoding long runs of, say, 20-second intervals in the data. And what we can see here is SQLite is actually smaller than the raw data size thanks to its variable width integer encoding format. OpenTSDB is about the same size for which actually corresponds with what the OpenTSDB authors have been noting for data size that they expect. And the size we're getting is roughly comparable with FinanceDB, the sort of optimized Wall Street time series database. So clearly, this evaluation is just a first step to motivate the space efficiency side of a design that looks like this for numeric time series. But clearly, we need to do some more work here to explore the space trade-offs between performance and space. And all these need the key question here is these need to happen in the context of a performance benchmark for time series. And although the data mining community has come up with a number of accuracy-based benchmarks for how effective a system or evaluation is, there isn't much in the way of a performance benchmark for time series mining it. And then beyond just the efficiency of the lowest level, a lot of questions of what do the layers on top look like? What does the API look like for accessing time series data? What's something that can support some of the operations I mentioned? Just to contrast it with one option you might think of, SQL, as other folks have noted as well, is typically not a good answer for this problem due to the inability to express things like ordering constraints over data. And then finally, where should specialized storage live? Is this simply a storage layer below another interface, or is it a completely separate database, which is perhaps not such a wild idea, considering that there are other databases out there that are also specialized for time series data and only cater to time series data and queries on it. So just to wrap things up, the takeaway message here is that there's certainly many unanswered questions here, but there's an opportunity, we think, for a more focused time series data store, something that addresses some of the frustrations of currently analyzing time series data. And as some of these glimmers of evidence are showing on the compression front, at least, even some simple principles can help move us towards at least a more efficient time series representation from the storage end. So I'll conclude my talk there. Thanks, and I'll open it up for questions.
Thanks. We're running a bit ahead of schedule, so there's plenty of time for questions.
Do you expect to support range queries on data fields other than timestamps? So for instance, one might imagine a data set that contains tuples of the form x coordinate, y coordinate, z coordinate, t. Right, so you can do range queries on the t. The others?
Absolutely. So sort of range queries on values instead of timestamps. We've thought about different options for doing that. That's not something that's sort of in the initial focus of queries. There are a couple answers. One is that you could imagine in something like this, you'd build a secondary index on values. The other way of thinking about that is a lot of queries on data look like, I want some value above a certain threshold. And there you might be able to use a multi-resolution aggregate to answer something like, if I have a max aggregate, I can use that to filter and only looking at data points.
The reason I'm asking is that the timestamp field has this interesting monotonicity property, right?
Exactly.
That you can leverage easily. The other fields, you're not so lucky with those, right?
For sure.
So how much of the elegance and frugality and simplicity of the approach just goes away when you add support for something else that you probably are going to have to support?
Absolutely. That's a valid concern, and I think a lot of that goes away. The reason that we sort of chosen time range queries is that it seems that a lot of the queries that we're performing are actually time range queries on the sort of data.
Singularity VMware. So in this case, it seems like you're focusing your storage layout, assuming that you have disks and you're only using them. But given that indexes would be a main thing here, And if some amount of SSDs are available, what all would you change in the design? Is that something you're also looking at?
That's an interesting question. I haven't given enough thought. So I think to give you a more full answer to that question, I'd probably have to take that offline. But I think that some of the same nice characteristics about append-only data also apply to SSDs. But you might want to consider changing some things if you're running that environment.
OK, thanks.
All right, let's thank the speaker again.